cannot wait for that. I'm bouncing around a little bit like a school child here. So it's about time that we got our first guest of the week on the show. He's a man that I love to listen to and to read to in the English press. He is, of course, a man who can make you laugh and brings the humour and also the sincerity to the back pages of the broadsheet world here in the UK. Is Mr. Jonathan Liu joining us here on the show. Jonathan, welcome back. It's a pleasure to have you back on the WFD Airways, mate. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Is there any football happening?
There's been a couple of bits and bobs that we wouldn't mind talking to you about. There was a playoff game that might be quite interesting to some people, and I think there's a playoff game tonight that could live up to some stuff, and something to do with an Italian guy, I'm not really sure. It's a pleasure to have you back, John, especially on a weekend as big as this. Let's start chronologically. Let's start with Aston Villa against Chelsea, and let's talk about Frank Lampard and just how incredible his feat is of becoming the all-time goal scorer for Chelsea from a midfielder. Incredible, is it not?
Yeah, it is. I mean, he is one of those special players that you maybe over time forget how you kind of forget how special and unique he is, because he's just kind of so sort of metronomically reliable. But I mean, the statistics are incredible. He scored sort of like 15 goals a season, or for 10 consecutive seasons, something like that. You might check that out. But the consistency of his scoring rate is what really marks it out. And this isn't a guy who was blessed with natural talent or pace or strength. He's just kind of he's kind of built himself up from the West Ham training grounds to Chelsea's record breaker.
How much, Jonathan, is it likely now that they'll give him this extension? There's been rumours about it today that he's going to get the contract extension. Is this going to happen now with Chelsea?
I think what this ultimately is going to come to is two factors: what Lampard gets offered in the summer, and what the new manager, whoever he is, whether he's Jose Mourinho or somebody who rhymes with Jose Mourinho. I think Mourinho may want to keep him because he's probably not envisaging being at Stamford Bridge for more than another 3 years. Lampard could easily give him another 3 years service. And the other factor, I guess, is if Lampard gets a decent offer, if he does get a decent contract from, one of these kind of new petrocarbon economies, from the Gulf perhaps, or China, then it's quite possible that he'll walk away of his own accord. But I think the one thing that is clear is that Abramovich and the Chelsea top table, they're not going to give Lampard a new contract on the basis of what tabloid back pages say. I think it will be a footballing decision, and one that the new manager will probably have to make as soon as he comes in.
It'll be interesting to see where Lampard's future lies come the end of the season. Let's move on then to the other game on the Saturday, the FA Cup final. Do you call it, as some people are, the greatest upset of the modern day era in the FA Cup?
Possibly. I think what was the even bigger upset in a way was that it was actually quite a decent game. The trouble with FA Cup finals is they've just been so lamentably dour over the last 10 years, 10-15 years, and in terms of an upset, it's up there with Everton beating United in 1995, Wimbledon in 1988, Coventry 1987. I do think it is a pretty huge up. I don't think you'll find anybody who really genuinely thought Wigan were going to win that. It is a massive upset.
Do you think that the fault of City has to be put on Mancini's head, as it appears to be today? Everybody's saying, and it looks like that he will be sacked before the game against Reading tomorrow. Or do you think that this is the players' fault, that they've become too complacent this season after the glory of the last 2 years?
Yeah, and I think Mancini is definitely sort of
They've become too complacent this season after the glory of the last 2 years.
Yeah, and I think Mancini is definitely sort of he's definitely feeling the heat, as it were, to use that sort of horrible kind of cliche. But his outburst, I don't know if you read the outburst that he was about to be replaced with Pellegrini. And rule number one for a manager, if you're thinking straight, is don't piss off your press officer because he controls your schedule. He might find himself having to do all kinds of banal interviews with you know, Angling Monthly and Horse and Hound over the next few days. But there's definitely a bit of this destabilising influence, and Mancini has to take. I mean, if you take this match in isolation, you could say it was a 90th minute header, and Zabaleta's tackle was, red card proved decisive. But over the season, especially over the last few months, when they've needed to step up a gear, like the team has been found wanting. There's been no cohesion. There's been no sense that a lot of these players actually want to be there. You're talking about your usual suspect, you know, Nasri's and whatever. But I mean, players like Yaya Touré just haven't. They've had maybe half a dozen good games since October, and you've got to put a little bit of that on Mancini. This is his team. He's built it. These are his players, and he's had to do a better job of melding them.
Where do these rumours come from? Because Mancini was, even out after the game when he was interviewed, was adamant that he would be at Manchester City at the start of next season. So are these just, you know, mumblings and bumblings, rumours just made up by the press, by the back pages? Or are there sources that need to be kind of stamped out? Because as you say, having these sorts of rumours leading into a cup final are disastrous for a club like City.
Yeah, exactly. And the point is that whoever wanted that story out clearly timed it to come out just before the cup final. Stories only ever come out if somebody wants them to come out. You just have to look at the Manchester United over the last sort of decade or so to know that things can generally be kept secret for a good while. Maybe not forever, but they can be kept secret. So what you've then got of it is this swash of agents and representatives and go-betweens, and that's where stories come from. That's where most football stories come from that kind of, literal rumour mill that's swirling around a big club. And it's almost impossible for a club as complicated as Manchester City to keep something like that secret if they are planning it, because there's always some agent or some representative or somebody kind of with, some stakeholder who is prepared to say something. That's kind of how it works.
It's obviously had a bad knock-on effect, and Mancini appears to already have interest from Monaco today, according to some of the press. Who would be... Pellegrini's been mentioned, but is he for certain the man that would step into this role should it become available at City?
That would certainly be what the available evidence would suggest, that they are lining up Pellegrini. He did put out a statement today on the Malaga website saying that no agreement had been made, which merely suggested to me that they were still thrashing out their personal terms. His agent did meet with Manchester City last month. It does seem like they're lining up Pellegrini, and it would sort of make sense, because he's in the kind of mold of manager that the likes of Cheeky Bagiristain would want to bring in, somebody who builds teams from the bottom up.
Let's move away from City, because we could be here all day talking about the problems with that side and the attitudes. And let's step away from Manchester in general and have a look at Liverpool just briefly. How good is Daniel Sturridge looking at the end of this season? And why is Brendan Rodgers able to get seemingly the best out of this guy when Chelsea just couldn't get the right attitude from Sturridge?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, he did have a couple of good months under Villas-Boas, but the successive manager, I don't think Di Matteo raised him at all. I don't think Benitez was too sad to see him go. It's important to remember that he didn't really play a great deal in the first half of the season, so he'll be a lot fresher than a lot of players towards the end of the season. But he has been excellent. I think he's flourished from having something to prove in the absence of Luis Suarez. He's been leading the line. He likes doing number one. This is the thing about Sturridge. You tell him you're the man, you give him the number nine shirt, you say, here, like, I'm relying on you. And he's the kind of player who responds to that. That's the kind of challenge he responds to.
Is that kind of thing that England need as a national team? I know the competitive games are still a way off for England, but is that what they need, a striker like that who can just embrace that number nine role and feed off the pressure that it puts on someone?
I suppose it is the kind of attitude you want. I still have my reservations over whether Daniel Sturridge is a potential international class striker, and it does kind of speak to a little bit of ego on his part. I'm not sure he's a long-term solution for England. He'll do perfectly well for Liverpool, but to be honest, I don't think he's a long-term solution for them either. The Liverpool opportunity came up for him when he was going through a little bit of a rut at Chelsea. He'll clearly go through dips in form at Liverpool, and the real test of his character, I guess, is how he deals with those. Because there will be offers on the table, but how much loyalty he shows to Liverpool really is the big test, I think.
Now, we do have to talk about the two departing managers who made their final home game appearances for their two clubs. Sir Alex Ferguson, of course, going into retirement. David Moyes making his last appearance at Goodison Park. There was question marks about the kind of reception that Moyes might get as he entered Goodison Park on the weekend, and it was all positive in the end. Were you ever in doubt that the Everton fans wouldn't embrace him?
No, I don't think so. I think there's a fundamental dignity to Everton fans that comes from essentially being a mid-table club for the last 20 years. They do appreciate sort of incremental success. They're not the kind of people who demand instant solutions. And what Moyes did, he made them into a better club. Now, granted, he made them to a better club and then made them into a slightly worse club and then better club and then a worse club and then a better club. But there has been a sort of steady improvement there. And yeah, I mean, it is, you know, we talked about Lampard earlier. The idea of somebody working his way up, never having played for his country, only playing a few times at the top levels of Celtic, and just sort of working his way up and spending 11 years at one team, it is an increasingly rare phenomenon. I think that's what Everton fans were paying recognition to, as much as the fact that, you know, he'd done so much for their club.
And it was nice for Moyes to go out, obviously, with a victory against West Ham this weekend. Who would Everton fans, do you think, want to come in and take this job? Because, as you say, taking somebody's job who's been there for 11 years, it's a big shock to a club system.
Yeah, it is. And I think what they'll want is somebody who can build another dynasty. I mean, I think Neil Lennon ruled himself out, and from what they've been saying, I don't think Malky Mackay and Michael Laudrup are too fussed about it. I think, you know, you're looking at somebody with a very broad tradition of bringing through young players. I mean, if you look at who's come through the Everton Academy in the last 10 years, the likes of Rooney and Rodwell and Ross Barkley, they've got a great sort of tradition of bringing through players. They'll want somebody in the Moyes mould, and I don't think they'll be too perturbed about having to go down to the Championship to get him. So I don't know whether that brings the likes of Mackay or Gus Poyet into the frame.
Who knows, if Wigan get relegated on Tuesday night against Arsenal tomorrow night, would that bring another Championship manager, or soon to be Championship manager, Martinez? Would that put him right in the frame for it? Is the way he can bring through young talent and get the best out of average talent as well?
Yeah, and the other thing about Martinez is that he has a very, very good understanding of the global transfer market, tactically very astute. He can bring in players, and I think the fact that he turned down Liverpool last season will really count in his favour. It is interesting because his stock has probably never been higher at this moment in time, but in a week's time it could never have been lower. So I think Everton would be a good fit for him. It's hard to know what he wants, though. He turned down Villa, he turned down Liverpool. So I mean, you wonder whether he wants to see it through at Wigan, you know, come hell or high water. But he's a very good manager.
How does he get this Wigan side down off this adrenaline buzz from the weekend and down and focused to play this game against Arsenal? Because if the FA Cup, compared to this Arsenal game, probably wasn't as important to Wigan.
No. I mean, certainly not financially. But I mean, it's a test of management. Having never managed a football club, I don't know how you get players from having sort of, you know, been around players, you know, experiencing great ecstatic high. What the danger is, obviously, that they're still running on adrenaline when they go out against Arsenal. And then when it gets to 60, 65 minutes, suddenly they've got nothing left. That's, I guess, the secret to what Martinez has to do with them over the next couple of days. I think he'll train them very lightly this week. I don't think they'll be doing very much. It'll more be about preserving them physically for the game rather than sort of getting their mind on the task. It's an incredibly hard one because this game is, like you say, more important than you know, than the cup final in a way.
And it's important for Arsenal as well. Does Wenger go all guns blazing against Wigan and hope not to get caught on the counter-attack by this side? Because they were stung last year when Wigan came up, grabbed an early one and then just sat back and soaked up Arsenal's pressure. Will Wenger be nervous going into tomorrow night's game?
I think he'll be less nervous than he would have been if this fixture had come in say, February. And it's interesting that they've been scoring a lot of early goals recently. I mean, I think second minute they scored against United and 20 seconds against QPR. I think he'll be confident that they can actually make a decent start without having to race out of the blocks and dive into everything. There's a sort of assurance about Wenger's Arsenal at the moment, which wasn't there 2 months ago, and that could help them.
It'll be a very interesting evening on Tuesday night. And Jonathan, we look forward to catching up with you towards the end of the season and obviously after, I assume, the last day of the season next Sunday. But it's a pleasure for you joining us and taking some time out of your day, mate. And we look forward to getting you back as soon as possible.
Cheers, Ollie.
Cheers, Jonathan. Thanks very much. Jonathan Liu there from the Daily Telegraph joining us here on World Football Daily to talk all things Premier League football. It was a crazy weekend in English football. Absolutely crazy in terms of some of the results, in terms of what was achieved. We're going to hear what Frank Lampard thought coming up a little later on in the show. But...